This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Mr. Humphreys, are you free?
I'm free.
Listeners, if you're free this afternoon, you're in for a treat. A conversation with the actor who played Mr. Humphreys, John Inman, one of the cast of the British comedy, Are You Being Served? John Inman is visiting Champaign-Urbana. He joins us for this hour of the Afternoon Magazine. And this evening, you can see him on our companion station, WILL-TV Channel 12. Tune in at 7 o'clock for an evening with John Inman. The program will feature favorite episodes of Are You Being Served? This afternoon, you can talk with John Inman. Your questions are welcome. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Outside the local dialing area, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. The British comedy Are You Being Served? Is seen in dozens of countries around the world, and for many years, it's been one of the most popular programs on public television in the U.S. WILL-TV 12 has broadcast the series more than 20 times since 1985. John Inman has had a long and very successful career in television, theater, and cabaret. He got his start at the age of 13. Again, the phone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Outside Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Mr. Inman, good afternoon, and welcome back to the Afternoon Magazine.
Thank you, Celeste. It's nice to be here.
About 2 years ago it was.
Is it? Yes.
You were here.
Yes.
In a different building.
Yeah.
Things are a little different.
I've just been describing the old building as it was rather like Doctor Who's police box. It was like TARDIS because there was a tiny little cottage with a porch. And you went in, you thought, well, wherever am I going? And you went through this little tiny, which was obviously at one time somebody's front room, and all of a sudden you were in a television studio.
Yes.
It was quite amazing.
Yes, that was the television studio. Yeah. It was an old house.
It was, yes, it was. But this is fantastic, isn't it? What beautiful premises you've
it's
got.
Very nice. Well, thank you, and welcome.
Thank you.
We have a caller waiting to talk with us.
Really?
Already.
So soon?
So soon. So are you... Are you free?
Don't ask me again.
All right. I'll stop now. I'll behave myself. Our caller is in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Good afternoon. I'm the volunteer that fell head over heels backwards for you when you were here 2 years ago. Do you remember?
Yeah, so you did that trick, then.
Yes,
it was. Head over heels backwards.
Yes, I couldn't have done it if I'd tried. But
so nice to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
And my daughter was very jealous that I got to meet you. She had just gone off to college and said, just as soon as I leave town, something exciting happens. But this fall, she's in Germany in college.
Oh, really?
You know, junior year abroad sort of thing. I don't know if you do that sort of thing in
Well,
Britain.
I don't. I mean, I'm an old man, darling, now. I'm not a student, you know. That's why I get very worried coming to Champaign-Urbana, because I'm the oldest person here. I am the only person on the streets without rollerblades. Did you know that?
Well, anyway, I just wanted to say hello and welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And it's very nice to be back here.
Thank you for your call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Outside the local dialing area, anywhere you're listening, call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455. When you landed the part of Mr. Humphreys, what were your first thoughts about how to play him?
Oh, well, I really didn't sort of dig very deep into it, because when I got the part, it was just a week's work, you see. It was just going to be a comedy playhouse for one episode. It was just one show called Are You Being Served, about a department store. And I got the script, and it said, Mr. Humphreys, is the second assistant on the men's hosiery department. This was the description of the of the role. Second assistant on the men's hosiery department, and he's been at Grace Brothers since he left school. It didn't even say how old he was or what he was or anything at all. So I sort of thought, well, he must have been there quite a while if he's second assistant on the hosiery department. You know, he's not the tea boy, because Mr. Lucas was the tea boy. So I covered myself with Fuller's Earth to make myself look dusty, as though I'd been there really a very long time and nobody had brushed me off or anything. I had lines drawn on my face, believe it or not, for that very first episode. And I was sort of very frousty, and but I didn't have many lines, so I sort of played him a bit sarcastic, as though he really didn't like it very much and didn't want to be there. But things changed, you see. Then I had the lines rubbed out, and I had new suits. And
and I think we need a translation. Fuller's Earth.
Well, Fuller's Earth. It's like a powder. It's it's
like a talcum or something.
It's like a talcum powder, but it's sort of a brownish. I think, I don't know what you use it for. You get it from the chemist. I think you use it for drying up sores or rashes or things like that. And, but it's always used in the theatre, particularly in the theatre. You know, when you're doing a mystery play or something like that and you open a big tome or a book or something like that and you go, and blow the dust. Well, it's nearly always Fuller's Earth they use sprinkled inside the pages for that.
That's what's inside my billfold.
And the moths.
Yes, the moths. And T-Boy?
T-Boy. Well, T-Boy is the junior. I mean, he is the one that, you know, that's how I started in the theatre, making tea and sweeping up. And, yeah, he's the junior.
Yeah,
the dog's body. Gopher, exactly. Body. Yes, okay. Yes.
Now, the creator and co-writer of the show, Jeremy Lloyd, has said that, you know, once the pilot was done and or the first show was done, this playhouse, and then it apparently took off, and then there was a series to be made, that at the beginning, he didn't expect you, he didn't expect Mr. Humphreys, to become such a main character, that the role was smaller at the outset, and
yes,
it grew.
Yeah. That's right, yes, like Topsy. Yeah. Yes, no, that's quite true. I mean, when I walked into that first rehearsal, I was the only one I'd never heard of, because Molly Sugden had been on the television, Trevor Bannister had been on the television, Frank Thornton had, Wendy Richard had. I was the new boy, really, but we changed all that. Well, we, and when I say we, I mean the public did, really, not so much just me, but Jeremy and David obviously saw, oh, we're better sort of write for this character.
That must have been great fun for you. When
it was wonderful. The happiest days of my life. It was absolutely marvellous, yes.
Do you ever tire of the character?
Well, no, because I don't play it anymore. I mean, you know, we're not doing it now.
Right.
So no, I don't tire of it. I'm very grateful to Mr. Humphreys, and so is my bank manager. You know, I mean, everybody's very happy about it. So he's been very good to me, and I can't knock it. I'm not one of these performers that say, oh, no, I couldn't possibly do that again, and all this, you know. So I think it's a bit silly to knock what's been successful for you. So. Yeah. So no, I'm a happy little bunny at the moment.
So there's a peaceful coexistence between John Inman and Mr.
And
Humphreys.
Mr. Humphreys, very peaceful indeed. Yes, yes.
Did Mr. Humphreys have a first name?
Yes, indeed, he had two.
Two first.
Yes,
names.
Wilberforce Claiborne. His name is purely so that I could have the initials W.C. I think that was Jeremy's thinking.
And I don't really recall those names being used on the program.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, well, yes. People do know them, yes, because I get letters addressed to him. So.
Now, how similar are the two of you? Are there similarities between the characters?
Yes, the twinkle in the eye definitely is a similarity, I suppose. I mean, I don't walk like Mr. Humphreys, otherwise I'd be arrested, I'm sure. So, There's obviously got to be a bit of a similarity, because I made him. I mean, I created him, so there's bound to be a bit of me in, a bit of cheek. The cheek of me, I suppose.
Pretty cheeky role.
Yeah, pretty cheeky role, yes, yes.
Did you ever worry that either you wouldn't push that cheekiness far enough or that you would push it over the
Too
edge?
Too far. Well, bearing in mind our heyday was the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, so it's quite a long time ago. In fact, this year, since we made the pilot, is 25 years, you know, so that's a long time. And we went as far as we could. The director, David Croft and Jeremy Lloyd, did actually say at times, we're going to go as far as we dare and see what happens. And if we get pulled all over the coals for it by the BBC, then we'll stop. But they didn't. They went as far as they could go, which is a lot further than one can go now, because we have these funny politically correct things and whatnot, don't we? Which I don't understand, I'm afraid. I think that stands for unfunny, politically correct.
Well, it certainly was an unpolitically correct program, Are You Being Served? It certainly was.
But it still is, you see.
Well, yes, it is, isn't it? Were there any moments where you thought, we're not going to get away with it?
Oh, yes. Oh, many, many times, yes, when we've been sort of doing a read-through or something like that, I have said, and other cast members have said, dare we do this? Can we get away with saying this? And they said, well, give it your best shot, you see. Well, the wonderful thing about the entire company, all these scripts were said in great innocence. Nothing was ponged. Nobody did a dirty joke. They weren't done as rude jokes or anything like that. They were done as perfectly innocent conversation. There wasn't even a twinkle in the eye. They were just said. And I think that's how we got away with everything.
What can you tell us about Jeremy Lloyd and David Croft, the creators and the writers for the program?
I love them. well, what can I tell you? I mean, David Croft I have known for a very, very long time. He first came to see me in a touring production of a musical called Salad Days, and then immediately forgot about me, I think, until suddenly he thought, oh, I know who can do this. Because I did work for him before, little bits and pieces on television, before Mr. Humphreys came along. And then I worked for him in a musical in the West End of London called Ann Veronica, which was a bit short-lived. It didn't have a very long run. And on the last night, he sent me a very nice letter saying, thank you very much for your work. You've been a tower of strength, and one day I will write you something that you can really get your teeth into. And then at the bottom of the letter he put, P.S. This letter does not constitute a contract. Which I have still got, that letter. And then years went by, and of course then he sent me Mr. Humphreys.
And what were you doing at the time?
I was doing a pantomime. I was doing Cinderella. I was playing an ugly sister in Cinderella at the Coventry Hippodrome. And it was coming to an end. We were about to finish, and I got the letter and the script from David saying, would you like to start on Monday and do this week's work? Well, it's an actor's dream, that, you see, to finish one job.
And have another.
And have another straight away. That was just wonderful. So that's really why I did it, more than anything, because it was just a sort of continuous thing. And he's been an absolute love to me, David, really. He's a great guy. He's got a great sense of humour. He's a great theatre man, you see, as opposed to television. He's been in television most of his life, but he started in the theatre. And he's the inventor of a thing called cut to reaction, which, before Are You Being Served came along, before Dad's Army, which he was responsible for, perhaps you don't know about that one, and many other television shows, He invented this thing for the screen, whereby you don't keep the camera on the person that's done the joke. You cut to the person who the joke is about, and in that way you get two laughs, which I think is quite brilliant. Mm. You see. That was his idea. That was his invention, and he's just gorgeous. Jeremy Lloyd worked at Simpsons Piccadilly for a while. He was an actor, and he was out of work, so he took a job at Simpsons Piccadilly Men's Store, and that's where Are You Being Served was sort of germinated, as it were. He looked round at the pomposity and stupidness of it all, and put it down on paper. So that's really where it all came from. And Jeremy's quite prolific. He writes lots of things. But he's also got lots of wives. Well, ex-wives, I should say. So he really only writes a series or works very seriously when he has to pay up alimony. But he's a love. I like him. We laugh a lot. I mean, he does make me laugh. So
he's hardest at work in between marriages?
Yes, that's right, yes.
Yeah. Cut to reaction. That idea, what a marvelous idea that is. It also offers the opportunity for the person who is reacting to give viewers a little physical humor, a little facial.
Of course.
So that adds
that's
another...
That's why Mr. Humphreys came in.
That adds another... dimension to the comedy. That ability to, or that going from, you know, the end of a funny line to the reaction, that has to be choreographed, doesn't it?
Well, no, you know, David would say in rehearsals. Maybe after a line that Mr. Lucas had said or Mrs. Slocum had said, he would actually say in rehearsal, "I'm coming to you, John, after this." You see? Now, I would know. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you another thing, Mr. Humphreys. You can keep your cat off my geraniums. Cut to Mr. Humphreys. Ooh. Sorry, I pulled the most wonderful face, listeners, then, but you can't see it because we're on the radio.
It was marvelous. You heard my reaction. In radio, we have to work with audio reaction.
Mm.
We've got some other callers we can talk with us. Let's go first to a caller on line 4 in Rockville, Indiana. Hello.
Well, hello, and I have to call you Mr. Humphreys.
You call me what you like.
Thank you kindly. Welcome from the colonists in Indiana, the state next door to Illinois.
Oh, thank you.
It would be an understatement to say how much we've enjoyed you as Mr. Humphreys, because we surely did, and I know I'm speaking for millions of people. But having said that, you've heard that before, on March 25th this year, we had the pleasure of seeing you in the play, My Fat Friend.
Oh, really?
At the Royal Windsor, I believe it was called.
It was, Theatre Royal Windsor, yes, indeed.
And we not only enjoyed the play, but we clearly enjoyed your remarks after the play.
You like the curtain speech.
I liked the curtain speech. We were probably sitting 40 feet from the front of the stage, and it was a great treat. Would you care to share anything that you might think of about that play, or if you're in a position to talk about your next artistic endeavors, I know we'd be very interested.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, I did enjoy the play very much. It wasn't the first time that I'd performed it. I've played it for quite a few times over the years. And, in fact, I got a bit worried, actually, this year, because I kept thinking I was getting a bit long in the tooth to play that part, but obviously, if you enjoyed it, I wasn't. But
you did well, sir.
Thank you. But, you see, talking about the curtain speech, this is something I've done for most of my life, even from being a young actor in repertory companies and whatnot. I've always liked to say good night to the audience. When I go to the theatre to see a play, the cast are very good and they bow, and the curtain goes up and down, up and down, up and down, depending how good the audience are and how long they clap. And then the curtain finally comes down, and everybody goes home. And I always feel rather empty when I'm watching a show, and that happens. So therefore, I have always, in everything I do, I actually say good night to the audience. That was how it started. But as you will realise, if you came to Windsor, that it's spread a little since then. So I sort of regaled them with one or two whimsical bits before I actually say good night. But I just think it's a way of saying thank you when an audience has been really nice before they go home.
Well, we surely enjoyed it, and we were able to catch the last train back to London. With that, I'll hang up, but it's a pleasure talking with you.
Nice to talk to you, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. Is there something we should know there about the last train to London?
Well, they're pretty early, actually. No, I think you can get from Windsor, but well, I think, bless him, what he was saying was, I didn't go on too long.
It was a very nice nightcap then. Got them to the train in time and feeling good.
Well, I hope so, yes. I do like doing that, I must say. I do like talking to the audience.
Let's talk to another member of our audience on line one, a caller in Morris. Good afternoon.
Yes, this is line one. I have several questions for John Inman.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hello. What's your name?
My name is Bernadine.
Bernadine?
Right.
Well, what an unusual name.
Well, I'm told it's French.
Is it?
But I'm Norwegian.
But you're not. And your dad had a bike, I know.
He named me. I wanted to ask you several things. Is Harold Bennett still living?
No, my dear. No,
he's
not.
He was so adorable.
Yes, yes, indeed. No,
and the chemistry between the cast was, it just leapt out at you from the screen. Marvelous chemistry with Wendy Richards and with all of you.
Well, thank you.
Well, I hope I'm accurate, but you could just sense it, that you had such fun doing that show.
Yes, well, we still have fun when we see each other, actually.
Oh, good.
You know, those of us that are still alive and well and kicking. Yes.
Well, of course, I loved it when you kicked. Anytime you danced, I was on the edge of my seat.
Oh, great.
Did you ever have any experience with the Cockney Theatre?
With the Cockney Theatre?
In the East End.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
Okay. And one of my favorite episodes was the Chanson d'Amour.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, that was the very last episode we made, you know.
Is that right?
Yes. And instead of being sad about it, we laughed so much making that Wendy Richard and Molly Sugden spent most of the time in the makeup room having their eyes repaired because their mascara was running all down their face.
Well, that brings up another question. I wondered if there aren't artificial lashes, at least for theater people, that are just press-on.
Yeah. Yes, there are.
Well,
I've got a box full. Yeah.
Oh, send me one. You should see the things that civilians have to wear. They
really?
Put glue on, and you don't want to lose your eyesight. I knew there were press-on ones. There just have to be.
Yes, you just glue them on. Yes. Yes.
Well, I have looked for years for a Chanson d'Amour music box, and I've been in stores where they have had 200 music boxes, and none of them have that.
Playing thing. Chanson d'Amour. Oh.
Oh, I love it. And I always felt so sorry for the cast when they were at Grace Brothers Cafeteria. The food looked so...
Well, I'm here to tell you, it was quite dreadful.
That's the way it looked.
Yes, well, because you see, what happens is, we record that show at 8 o'clock at night. We let the audience in about 7:45, and then we record it at 8, between 8 and 9:30. Well, that food has been hanging around since about 11 o'clock in the morning, so it's really not the nicest thing to put in your mouth.
Well, when we were in Great Britain a couple of years ago, we were pleasantly surprised that the food was marvelous.
Good. Oh, good.
We weren't prepared for it to be so nice. Thank you.
You're
I'm
welcome.
I'm so glad you could be in Champagne.
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you.
Bye.
Thank you for your call. Other calls are welcome. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, John Inman, one of his best-known roles, Mr. Humphreys of Are You Being Served? And this evening at 7 o'clock, you'll want to tune in to WILL TV Channel 12, our companion station, for an evening with John Inman. In the meantime, you can talk with him here this afternoon, 333-9455, or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. You mentioned you had been playing, before the role of Mr. Humphreys came along, you had been playing one of the ugly stepdaughters in Cinderella. Can you tell us what kind of treatment you gave that character?
Well, you see, I play a very strange lady, known as the Dame in pantomime, every Christmas. Now, I haven't played Ugly Sister for ages and ages. That was something I did when I was a lot younger. And as far as the treatment's concerned with Ugly Sisters, really they're coat hangers. They just say a few lines, go off, change the clothes, and come back on again with something ridiculous, you know, all the time. We used to have about Barry Howard, my other sister, and I, we had about 28 costumes between us for one production. And it was really a matter of changing clothes all the time, you know, and getting laughs. That's really what it was all about.
Yeah.
But now I play, like this Christmas, I shall be in at the Grand Theatre, Wolverhampton, in The Adventures of Robin Hood, playing Nurse Wonder, nurse to the babes. Now, last year I played Nurse Wonder, but I was in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I played Snow White's nurse, Nurse Wonder. So I'm sort of stuck with that at the moment. For years and years and years, I played Mother Goose. It's just something I absolutely love every Christmas time.
Yeah. What's your favorite costume, then? Do you have
one? Oh, I have so many. I have so many. I mean, like this Christmas, I shall have two new ones, and I add two all the time, you know. I mean, I just mix and match and change them around and whatnot. I have one of my favorites is a Belisha Beacon. Do you have those? I don't know whether you have those in America.
I don't know what that is.
Well, it's a striped pole with a big orange light on the top, and it denotes a zebra crossing, a pedestrian crossing. And it was invented by a man called Belisha, and it's called a Belisha Beacon, and it flashes on and off. Well, I have a costume like that, which I like. In fact, I've had three of those, because two of them have worn out, and I'm on Mark III at the moment. It's just something I love doing every Christmas, you know. It's hard work, because we do two shows a day.
And how many changes?
Oh, well, this year I shall probably have about 12 changes, yes, throughout the show.
Mm. Do you work on the design of these?
I designed them.
You designed
yes.
them?
At one time I used to make them as well. That's because I couldn't afford anybody to make them, so I used to make them. It was a sort of needs-must type thing. But, no, I design them now. I draw them. And then I have several little ladies with needles and bleeding fingers that make them.
I think that would be great fun to design costumes.
Oh, like yes, that. They are, you see, because you can go mad. You let your imagination run riot and turn it into some either glamorous or funny creation, you know.
Oh. When did you decide it would be comic theater that you would get into, that you were so good at it?
Well, I think it's a while ago, actually, but you find out, you see, when you work for a repertory company where you do a different play every week, you rehearse one play while you're actually playing another, you know, mm-hmm. change over. And you don't have much choice as to what you play. You're given the role by the director each week. There you are. That's your next week's role. That's your next week, you know. And it's a wonderful opportunity to find out what you're best at. Now, I am the most awful police inspector. I mean, I'm quite dreadful and hate every minute of it. I was in one company and I'd played about three comic roles, one after the other. And then I was an inspector in an Agatha Christie. So in order to look like an inspector, I had a raincoat and I had a trilby hat. I mean, that's what inspectors wear, isn't it, you see? And when I made my entrance, there were two old ladies sitting on the front row. And one turned to the other and said, "Now you'll like him, he'll make you laugh." And it was so frustrating because I couldn't, you see. I was playing the wrong part. And then I decided that I must stick to what I'm best at and what I enjoyed. Because laughter is like a fix to me. I mean, sure. It really is a drug, yes.
Great expectations on the part of those two in the audience, yeah, and no? You couldn't fulfill them.
I know, isn't it a shame?
Oh, boy. Do you often hear things from the audience as you're working?
Yes, usually at matinees, actually, because the old ladies come to the matinees, and they're the ones that talk. Or they're probably with a friend who is deaf, or maybe a little short-sighted. So they will explain what's going on.
Is that okay with you?
Oh yes, I mean I'm there to entertain. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like people taking photographs. There's always an announcement in the theatre: no photographs. But somebody always does. Well, fortunately, I'm in a position to the sort of stuff I do, I can stop. Mm. And let them take another one if they want, you know, mm-hmm. which always gets another laugh. Mm-hmm. So there goes my fix, you see.
Now, in the evening, during evening performances, how do you gain a sense of who's in the audience and the experience that they're having in a show?
Well, I suppose that's why I've stuck to comedy, because I don't honestly know how actors work to silence, mm-hmm. Especially a sort of disinterested silence. Now, the play I've just done that gentleman was talking about, My Fat Friend, there are some silences in that. There are some very sort of poignant moments, which I don't mind, because I know that there's a very big laugh just around the corner. So that doesn't worry me. But to do a whole evening of silence, mm-hmm. I wouldn't like that very much, because I think they've all gone home. I think there's nobody there, you know, because it's pretty black out there. Mm-hmm. As far as judging who is out there and what's out there is concerned, is that you can do it in the first few minutes. You have a sort of yardstick, like a couple of lines that you know always get either a snigger or a laugh. So you know that you're on the right track. Now, if they fail, then you have got to work. You know, you've got to do something to pull some kind of laughter out of the bag. But at least with comedy, you're not doing comedy unless they laugh, are you? I mean, right. It's pretty obvious that, you know, you say, "I am doing a comedy." And if they don't laugh, you're not doing a comedy. Yeah. So you've got some feedback. You've got it coming back at you all the time.
Every once in a while, you'll see a comic on television saying, "You know, last night was a really rough crowd. They didn't find anything funny." What do you do with a tough crowd when they're not with you in the first few minutes? What do you do? What kinds of things go through your mind about what am I going to do to get these folks to?
Yeah, I think I think the worst thing you can do is hurry up. I mean, it's a natural reaction to, like, let's hurry up and get me off as fast as you can. But I don't think one should do that. I think you should stick it out. And you tend to find that, I mean, if you're using new material that you haven't used before or something like that and it's not working, you immediately go to old material that you know works. And in any monologue, for instance, or routine that one might do, you do have your pillars, your columns of that are safe areas. So you go to those. And then you can go back to the stuff, because you've got a sort of... They've been primed, then. It's like priming a pump, in a way, really.
Ever feel tempted to hang on to one of those pillars for a while? And
oh, yes, yes, if it's going well, yes, of course. Oh, yes, yes. But, you know, it depends entirely what you're doing. If you're doing a play, then you stick to the script, roughly, because of your fellow artists. You can't mess about too much. If you're all by yourself, then you can wander wherever you like. You can talk to the audience, you know. A wonderful comic called Ken Dodd that we have at home. He's a stand-up comedian. He's marvellous. And he has a marvellous line towards the end of his act, if he hasn't been going very well. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, there are a lot of people in this country with absolutely no sense of humour whatsoever. And why you all had to come tonight, I don't know."
And do they laugh?
Yes.
Yes. Thank goodness. Let's talk with another caller. On line one, caller in Thomasboro. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Inman.
Hello.
You're giving us a wonderful afternoon, and I've enjoyed it tremendously. I used to be in Corncob Theater and... Theater in the Round myself as a younger person, and one of the advantages I thought, which is also in repertory, is that you play all kinds of parts. You may be the star one week, and the next week you are the prop girl, and I think that's a wonderful way in theater to help people's humility and to overcome the star system, which really gets really hard on people when they start getting older and wrinkles, and that they're willing to serve in other parts. I wonder, I've thought often too late for our own family, but we have such an elitism of our viewers. And if you try to get kids to do things, they think they can't do it because they're not professional. If families, when they read books, if you could do this in any way and teach it some way or another, as Walter Dimarsh used to do with music, if you could get kids to take parts and sort of let them be the father and the mother, like role modeling, only do it with classics at home when they're very little, so that we don't lose completely the liberal arts or the classical education. It could be done simpler at home instead of this technical, materialistic education we are driving most of our children in Western society to.
Well, I think it's very good training for anything, for any walk of life. I think performing is good training. It gives confidence, and it does educate. I see what you mean as well about the repertory system is marvellous, because yes, you are the star one, you are the star one week, and you're the tea maker the next, and it's good, it's very, very good. It is a leveller, a great leveller. But as far as families performing together, I just think that's absolutely wonderful. I mean, that's not so much my family, but when I was little, I performed at home. Just after the Second World War, you know, we all had blackout curtains to our windows. My mum had a clothesline in her backyard. And when the blackout curtains came down for good at the end of the war, I had those put on the clothesline, and they were my curtains, and I used to open them and close them and perform at home. And that's how it all started. Those blackout curtains have got a lot to answer for, really.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call this afternoon. So when the blackout curtains opened...
There I was!
There you were. What were you performing?
Oh, I would be... performing anything like, you know, popular songs of the day, or I don't know what I was performing. I was only 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But yes, I did do that. I mean, this has always been, you see, that is what I've always said. I want to go on the stage, right from being very little. And I'm a very fortunate person, because I am on the stage, and I've made a living, and it's my job. now. This is my job, and I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah. Going back to the time when you were coming out of the blackout curtains to, you know, when you first stepped out onto the stage, I think you were 13.
Yes, for real. Yes.
Did you find family and teachers and friends encouraging?
Oh, teachers were encouraging, yes. I had a couple of good teachers at the school I was at that were encouraging. And one of them, Mr. McCarry, he was the English teacher, and the drama teacher, obviously. Very nice man. I don't actually know whether he's still alive. He was on my This Is Your Life. They brought him on, which was rather sweet, I thought. It was very nice. He was very, very supportive. My mother was very supportive in a sort of mum way, you know. But then, of course, when I went into the theatre, and I did spend time out of work, like a lot of young actors do, she did say those immortal lines, "John, why don't you get yourself a proper job?" But, of course, later on, when things got very mm-hmm. good, it was all right.
In between jobs on the stage, did you ever work in a department store?
Yes, I did. Oh, yes. And learnt an awful lot, which consequently went into, Are You Being Served?
Mr. Humphreys.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
I was a window dresser, actually. I was in the display department. I didn't actually stand behind the counter. One had to occasionally, you know, if the mm-hmm. shop was busy, you'd help out. But mm-hmm. but chiefly, I dressed the windows.
There's a wonderful cast of characters who work in department stores.
Aren't they marvelous? Yes. They're all quite insane, I think.
So as a window dresser, is that where you learned Mr. Humphrey's trick of when things were a bit snug? A garment, stretch it over his knee just a little bit.
It is actually true that, you know. I mean, people, you know, that is true.
They do that.
Yes. Yeah. We have another one, sir. And you haven't. We have another one, sir. Here, try this one.
I remember seeing, as a little girl, a sitcom on television where they took a woman, you know, the cliche being that women wanted to wear a size 6 shoe and not an 11, you mm-hmm. know, God forbid. And so they would take the size 6 and they would take it into the fitting room and put it on the stretching machine, which turned out just to be a broom, you know. So then you and the creator of the show, Jeremy Lloyd, were there others in the cast who had some background?
I don't think so. Yeah. No, I don't think so. But, yes, I certainly worked. I worked for a firm called Austin Reed's in Regent Street in London for quite a while. Well, a year.
And I suppose, too, then, the working in display and in window dressing, that stood you in good stead for your costume design.
Oh, yes, it did, indeed. Yes. I've always liked doing all that. I mean, when I was at school, I used to paint scenery. My last year in school, I don't think I did any academic lessons at all. I just used to go. I had a note from the headmaster, and as soon as the register was called, at the top of the day in the morning, I used to take this note out and get a clout behind the back of the head from the from the teacher, and he'd say, "Oh, go on then." And I used to go, because I went to a secondary modern school, and there were two schools side by side. One was a girls' school, one was a boys' school. Uh-huh. And the big hall with the stage in it was in the girls' school. So I used to spend most of my time in the girls' school with a little brown overall painting scenery. That was most of the last year of my schooling that I did that.
Hmm. Well, it did well by you.
Well, I hope so, yeah. Yes, you know. Like I said, well, ages ago at the beginning of the interview, I'm a very happy bunny.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you're a very happy bunny, and I'm glad your happy bunniness appeared on the show with me today.
Thank you.
I want to thank you so much. Before we go, I do want to ask you, do you have a favorite episode?
Well, I've got lots of favorites, Celeste, but you see, I get asked this question a lot, so I've decided that my favorite episode is going to be Heir Apparent, because that was when I played my mother, Mrs. Humphreys, which, I mean, it's a long story as to how that happened, because I got the script for it, and I thought, oh, gosh, I've got a mother all of a sudden, you know. And I said to David, who's playing my mother? He said, I don't know, we haven't cast it yet. Oh, so I left it, you see. And days went by, we did other episodes, and then it came to do this particular episode, and we all used to sit round a big table to start with and just read it out loud through with a stopwatch on it to see how it was. And when it got to Mrs. I was looking at the door to see whether it was an actress I knew or who it was going to be to play my mother, and nobody came through. Nobody came through the door at all. So when the character arrived in the read-through, David said, oh, John, will you read this? So I said, yes, of course. I thought I was just sort of filling in, you see. And then after I read it, he said, well, I suppose you'd better play it. And it is my belief that he left it until then so that he wouldn't have to give me another fee.
Oh. That's pretty sneaky. Well, one of my favorite episodes is where there's been some trouble over, will the staff actually get a raise? There's been a pay freeze or something put on. And Mr. Humphreys goes and talks with Maggie Thatcher. That was a wonderful surprise for me as a viewer to see that unfold. And did you ever hear any reaction from her?
No, I've not actually shaken hands with Maggie Thatcher, but I have been at the same function. We were at a kids' charity thing together, we were, I suppose, a little bit further away than you and I are, and she was surrounded by children, and so was I. And our eyes met. And she didn't say hello, she didn't say anything, she just sort of went... Now, sorry about that, people listening, but that was my impersonation of Margaret Thatcher.
Kind of a regal nod.
A regal nod, yes. Yeah. A recognition nod, it was. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. John Inman, look for him this evening on our companion station WILL-TV Channel 12. Tune in at...